The song that we sang this morning from the Magnificat is typical of Luke's theology. God is turning things around. Mary sings it in the Magnificat, right? The rich will be sent away hungry. The hungry will be filled with rich things, and the rich will be sent away empty. These things back and forth all the time. There's this turning of things. They're not going to be the way they are now, with the rich having everything and the poor having nothing. Luke's gospel insists on this, and it happens all the time. And this parable that we have before us is one such time where there is this reversal of things. Here's the rich man. He's in his house. He's eating sumptuously every day. And he's dressed in what? Purple clothes, right? Purple. This is the sign of power. It comes from Rome, the Roman Empire, but also it could also be the priests in Jerusalem, right? Purple cloth. It's a sign of importance. It's a sign of power. Here's this guy, and he's eating, and he's got this dress on, he's dressed in the purple clothes, and every day there's poor Lazarus at his gate. It must be some gate, because the rich man never opens it to see Lazarus. Right? Maybe he does open it and walks right by. He never sees Lazarus. Well, Lazarus dies. And he goes to be with Abraham. The rich man likewise dies and is buried. And then we have this strange thing where the rich man is in torment. And Lazarus, the poor guy, is at the bosom of Abraham. Beautiful image, right? Here's Abraham. Here's the thing, though. You know there are two rich people in this story, right? There's the rich man who doesn't see Lazarus, and there's Abraham. Abraham is famous for being rich. Isn't that interesting? But he's also famous for hospitality and for generosity. Think there's the difference. So to think about just being rich, richness in itself isn't going to do it, isn't going to make you tormented in the afterlife. And just as a little aside, let's not get too carried away with this as a literal image of how heaven and hell are going to be, right? I mean, it's a story that Jesus, and there's a more important point here to be made, and that is, like, it's a little bit like, you know, that the stories that they can be jokes, or they can be stories about, you know, a group goes to heaven and they meet Saint Peter, and Saint Peter tours them around, right? And they get to the Lutheran section, and Peter says to the people, "Shh, everybody needs to be really quiet." So they walk through very quietly through the Lutheran section of heaven, and they're through, and Peter says, "Okay, we're out of the Lutheran section." And somebody says, "Well, why? Why do we have to be quiet walking through the Lutheran section?" And Peter says, "Because they think they're the only ones in here." Now, is that a story about how heaven really is? No, right? No, it's a story about how we are, right? How it's a story of self-righteousness, isn't it? Right? And it's a great little warning about it. Like, you know, that's not how we want to be, right? And this story is very similar, all right? The story is about rich people and all people, and how do we tend to the least among us? How do we tend to the Lazaruses among us, right? That's what this story is about. And it's a really important thing. And if Luke is right in his understanding of turning things around, this is going to get turned around. In the kingdom to come, the rich and the poor are going to get flipped around. So there they are, and they're in the story. Lazarus is at the bosom of Abraham, and the rich man still can't get out of his mind that he's rich and important, right? He says, "Father Abraham, send Lazarus to dip his finger in the water and cool my tongue." He gives Abraham an order. This is an imperative voice. "Abraham, do this." Well, you know, when we're in power, it's just hard to let go of it sometimes. we get into these patterns, right? And here's this guy, and he's ordering Father Abraham, of all people, to do something. And he still doesn't see Lazarus as anything other than someone who might serve him. And Abraham says, I'm sorry, my son, but I can't make it. We can't make it across. There's this chasm that has been created, and you can't come to us, and we can't come to you. And of course, it's a chasm of our own making, of the rich man's own making. And he says, well, then please, he has, have mercy on my brothers. Go, send Lazarus to my brothers and warn them, in case, so that they don't come to this place of torment. There's finally a little hint of little mercy that he has for his brothers. He doesn't want them to be down there with him. And Abraham says, they have Moses and the prophets. They should listen to them. And of course, Moses and the prophets are filled with stuff about how we are to treat the poor and the lowly among us. And Amos is just the best, another example of that here, right? You know, woe to you all who are having a big party right now, because you're going to be the first ones to go into exile. Flipping, right? And then Abraham says, sorry, if they don't listen to Abraham and to the prophets, they won't listen, even if somebody should be raised from the dead. Isn't that something? So, it could be a commentary on the fact that not everybody is going to be altogether excited and jump right in with the resurrection of Jesus, right? As is true, there's all kinds of problems. Some people believe, some people don't believe, and so it could be, yeah, they might not believe, even if someone is raised from the dead. But I think there's something else here. I think it's this. Abraham says, they won't believe even if somebody's raised from the dead. And the echo should be something like this. Jesus says, I'll take that bet. I'll take that bet. I think they will. I think they will turn. I think they will believe. I think they will enter into the kingdom of God if someone is raised from the dead. I'll take that bet. And so, Jesus goes. And he dies, and he's raised from the dead. And then what happens? Well, let's see. What does happen? Well, there's stories in the book of Acts, for example, that I think are really important. The story of Lydia, who is what? She was a seller of purple cloth. She herself was a woman of means, right? And what happens? Paul and Silas go, and they start preaching, and Lydia gets this incredible spirit to be able to really hear what Paul is saying. Which what Paul is preaching is Jesus crucified and risen. And this dealer in purple cloth, this rich woman, says to them, if you have judged me faithful to the Lord, come and stay with me. And she's baptized, and she believes, and she supports the ministry of one who has been raised from the dead. There's a guy named Barnabas. We don't know if he's exactly rich, but we know he has a field that he goes and sells and brings the money back to the apostles and says, use this money for the ministry. Generosity comes when people are encountered by the risen one. It's beautiful. It's important. It's powerful. And every rising from the dead is really a story about Jesus. There's one among us, I'm going to pick on you, Don, who knows a little something about this and who's lived it. Don did well for himself. He did well. Well, he had a son. And his son got meningitis early on, and he was mostly blind. And his son got this great new lease on life through Lighthouse for the Blind. was able to work, have dignity, leave a really good life. And part of it was because that program gave him a new life. Really good. Right? Didn't raise him from the dead. But I don't know if it didn't. In some way, raise him from the dead. So what's Don? He sees this. He watches it. He watches it throughout his son's life. And then what does he do? He says, this is really amazing. And Don, who had done all kinds of stuff for Lighthouse for the Blind already, he had done enough, he could have retired from that generous thing, says, no, we need more. And so he has this plan for Lighthouse for the Blind to open up a workshop in Spokane. And he pours, as he's already retired, he's already done everything he needs to do, but he pours himself into that project of generosity. And he gives his time, his talent, and his possessions towards making that happen. So that other people can have the same beautiful, rich gift that his son had. I'll take that bet on Don Mollett. How about y'all? Huh? That's Jesus. I got another one. So several years ago, many years ago, I took a group of kids from Nicaragua, to Nicaragua rather, not from, to Nicaragua, and we had to raise money. And it was $700 a kid to go, and so I saw several people in the congregation, and I thought, well, they have some means, I'm going to go and ask them if they'll sponsor a kid. And the kids were doing their own fundraising as well. So I went to one family and a couple there, and I was talking to them and explaining the whole thing. We're going to take them to Nicaragua. We're going to have 10 days there. We're going to do all kinds of stuff, the whole thing. And the husband looks at me and he says, yeah, I think we could do one. Yeah, put us down, Pastor. We'll sponsor a kid. His wife is going, no. Her husband says, you don't want to sponsor a kid to go to Nicaragua? Why not? She says, not one, two. And then she says, remember our nephew. And he says, oh, yeah. Oh, Pastor, put us down for two. Because their nephew had just a few years earlier was heading down a terrible road. Drugs, alcohol, the whole scene. Right? Somehow or another, he got hooked up with a church group that went to Mexico to do a mission trip. 2 weeks down in Mexico, among the poor, among the Lazaruses of the world. And that kid came back a different person. He was lost, and then he was found. He was dead, and now he's alive. And that couple remembered. They had seen someone rise from the dead. And they believed. And their generosity of spirit oozed out of them. Not one, two. I'll take that bet on them too. I'll take that bet on you. I'll take that bet on you. I'll take that bet on all of you. That seeing the power of God raising people up into new life will inspire us into faith, will inspire us into generosity, will inspire us to go and see Jesus in one of his many distressing disguises among the poor. The people at the door who a lot of people don't see. But you see. And you will see. And they and you will be raised to new life. You will believe. And your hearts will be cracked open. Because Jesus has been raised from the dead. He is in you. There is no gate so strong that you all will not open it and see what's outside there. And when you see it, you will respond, because you know that one has been raised from the dead. And that's the one we will follow. Thanks be to God. I'll take that back.